Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to Deeper. It's lovely as always to be here with you all. I'm here with Dan. Dan, great to have you here. Missing Tim, but always happy to have your brain.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good to be here. Good afternoon to everyone. Yes, Tim is not with us today, but he'll be back soon.
So. We kind of been on a roll with all three of us for a second. So it'll be good to get that back. But yeah, we've got, you know, summer schedules. Those kind of get
a little here and there.
So before we dive into the deep stuff, I just kind of wanted to have a little conversation, a lighter conversation. So we're almost done with outdoor service. We've been doing outdoor service now for 3 weeks, although only two of those were actually outside.
Yeah.
Which to me, that's a little bittersweet because I love the outdoor service. I love how laid back it is. I love how much more casual it is, communing with God, with nature. Just being outside is something really good and filling for me, even despite the additional amount of work required to get that set up.
Sure, for you in particular, yeah.
For me specifically. And I was just wondering, what are some things that you appreciate about outdoor that we don't necessarily have indoor, and then if there's something you appreciate about indoor that we can't get outdoors.
Yeah, I think you've already hit on some of it. The outdoor worship, the connection with creation is very close, you know, and some maybe find it more distracting, but I think it's just nice when you take in that setting and you see just a wider expanse of God's creation, whether it's the trees, the birds are usually doing some things out there, maybe even a critter or two occasionally. Yeah, it's a little bit more... has more variables, you know, with wind, we got to get all our papers
wind
down
and rain. And
yet I think it takes us away from maybe like we got to present this kind of perfect thing because we know that's not the case. We just fool ourselves. So there's something good about that. And sometimes it's good to just be in a little different setting, maybe a little bit out of our normal comfort zone. There's maybe not where we want to live all the time, but it's good for us to be a little bit uncomfortable at times too, perhaps. And I think it's just a little more laid back. I think it's a positive for us in our worship too. It's just can take it down maybe a button, so to speak, and just kind of enjoy being outdoors there together in our camping chairs or patio chairs, whatever you want to call them. And I think being inside, there's different things musically we can maybe do with sound, of course. Certainly from a video perspective, you know, we had
no projectors outside.
Right. We went inside, you know, we shared a couple pictures from our youth group in, who is on a mission trip now. Right. And we're able to do that. And, you know, there's different connections you can do with technology in that way. And, and there's maybe a closeness. We get kind of more spread out maybe outside a little bit, different ways. Maybe you sit by different people in different spaces too. But yeah, it's good, right? We can worship the Lord anywhere.
I was just curious because, you know, this has been a conversation I've been having with a lot of different people on what they like, what they don't like. And so it's always just kind of interesting to hear how different people connect with God in space. And while we're talking about connecting with God, you, again, hit another grand slam. Always appreciate your sermons. Always learn a lot. Could you refresh our memory real quick?
Sure. Yes. We are doing, while we're outside, a series connected with food and God's provision of food. And so we've been in some stories that food plays a part. And so we were in 1 Samuel 25. This is a story, maybe not the best known story. David and Abigail are the two primary characters, and then Abigail's husband, Nabal. And there's a conflict there between David and Nabal, and Abigail brings out this gift of food for David and his men that helps to ease that situation and lead David in particular away from some bloodshed that maybe he didn't need to go to. So we really talked about how food plays a role, and God is really, of course, the one the Lord's helping out his servant David here. But food, and of course, through the wisdom of Abigail, how she deflates this situation. So we used an image of like a soccer ball, an inflated ball, and how if you inflate it too much, it can explode.
Yeah.
And how David and his anger and pride, you know, that can start to get into trouble. So just seeing how food can even help kind of calm us down at times and sharing a meal. So amongst other things, of course, in the text.
Yeah. Well, and there was so much in this, and I'd love to kind of pick your brain about, I'm a history buff. I love learning about history, love learning about the context. And there's a lot here that I think, you know, we would benefit from understanding a bit more. So like, I don't know, let's kind of dive into the politics of the time, if that's okay. So Samuel just died.
Yes.
Yeah. That's significant. Why?
Yeah, Samuel's been the leader in Israel for a long time. He, of course, was really the prophet and priest in a lot of ways there at the outset. And then he anointed Saul, who is still king at this point. And he's also now anointed David to be the successor, the man after God's own heart. And so it's interesting that in the chapter before, Saul and David have a confrontation again. Mm-hmm. And Saul, at that time, when he kind of is repenting for trying to kill David again, basically voices, "I know, David, you're going to be king. You're a better man than I am."
Interesting. And
it's interesting that at that point, we get the report that Samuel's died. It's almost like, yep, your work's done, Samuel. This is taking place, this succession, your anointing. Mm-hmm. Even Saul recognizes that it's going to be David. So that's interesting to note that that happens right before.
Right, and then Samuel dies, and then Saul's clearly still like, no, actually, no, I'm still king. Because David's still practically a refugee at this point.
Yes, David's still on the run. Every time it seems like Saul is relenting, he has a change of heart. I mean, Saul's definitely, we'd probably diagnose him with a mental illness, really, if we were looking at him today, because he is just so up and down and just drastic mood swings. And we see this going on for a while. And the text really points us to being that the Lord's Spirit has left him. But he, at one moment, is talking that way to David, like we just said, like, you're going to be the king. And the next, he's after him with everything he's got, trying to kill him. But Saul still is influential, and we see that in the text here. This area that David now has settled in is one that Saul conquered some years before.
Okay.
He actually erected a statue of himself there, Saul, in this region close by. So you know it's probably a land that has had some faithfulness to Saul, some loyalty to Saul.
So it's interesting that David and his followers are kind of just hiding out in this Saul stronghold.
That's right. In a way, yeah. They've been there, it seems like they're there for a chunk of time.
Enough time for a harvest.
And historically, you never know what's going on, right? Oftentimes, there might have been another battle. Saul just couldn't chase around David all day. He actually had to do some other things. Still was king, right? And so he might have just been off on other business for a while, and David's like, this is an okay spot.
Gotcha.
But interesting politics.
Very interesting politics. And so then we hit Nabal, who his big issue really seems to be he thinks so much of himself. So it's pride and then greed.
Yes.
As well. Like, he's just got all the goods at this point.
Yes. It's often been noted he's really defined by his possessions. So his life consists in getting more possessions, defending them. That's what's happening with David. And also just receiving joy from them. In fact, we didn't go to the very end of the chapter reading, but we hear that he's just having a huge party, just kind of a big kind of drunken bash toward the end. And that's when he receives the news about Abigail's visit with David, and he gets struck with some sort of physical issue before he dies. So he really lives for his possessions.
Very extravagant.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. And he's got a lot of them. I mean, the text says he's very wealthy.
Yeah. Which then kind of, that kind of brings me to a question here, because Nabal is, he's got a very overinflated view of himself. And, you know, we read him as the bad guy.
Sure.
In this, which often he probably is.
He certainly is. Certainly is personified
that way. But then, you know, it kind of got me thinking, when and where am I, Nabal? Because, you know, I look at growing up overseas and having a lot of experience traveling in the global South, you realize that in comparison, man, I'm Nabal if I lived overseas right now. You know, I don't necessarily have a lot. I'm not super wealthy now by American standards. But man, if I was living overseas, I've got that wealth and that influence and that connection. And so that just kind of begged the question for me, like, how do we recognize if we're starting to fall into this materialism that Nabal had? Mm-hmm. Even if it's not, like, by our standards a lot, it's still a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Especially even historically speaking.
Sure, yeah. You look at the global scale and you realize, you know, even if you made $40,000 in a year, you're going to be in the top 5% of wealth in the world.
Right.
You know, we just don't think of it that way because we are in all that culture
that,
where that doesn't seem like much. But it's a good question. You know, it's noted that Nabal's name means fool, foolish one. And we talked a little bit in the sermon about how foolishness has a lot of different descriptions given to it in Scripture. But some of that has to do with just thinking that we are the gods, that we're in control, that we can do what we want. And so Nabal with his possessions, kind of like that's all he's living for, and I'm going to do what I want with my stuff. There's no sense that, you know, God gave this to me. Do you remember that story Jesus tells of kind of the rich fool in the Gospels, where
I think so,
he
kind
of gets to say, he's like, oh, I got a lot here, but you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to build a bunch of barns and store this up, and then he gets this message that says, you're going to die, you know, tonight, right? What's the point of building that up? Because the reality is, we don't know; it's not ours. In the first place, it's the Lord's. And so that perspective, for me, if I'm getting off thinking like this is mine, it's got to live for me too, and for, you know, all this stuff's got to serve me, that is danger, right, for us. And instead of saying, you know, how can I use what the Lord has given to me, we use that term steward,
right
for and his kingdom, for his, and to his bless people. Others.
And so that was an interesting thing too, is that like, Nabal's really, you know, his, I've got the verse here. Let me see here. So it's, he says, many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat that I slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that's a really interesting, you know, that's a very, like, it's me and my own. I'm going to look out for me and my own. And these people, I don't even know where they come from. Who cares what's going on with them?
Right. Right. I think so. You definitely hear in that. You know, this is my stuff. These are my people. I'm going to take care of that. And that, I think that presses because, you know, we can be good at taking care not just of ourselves but our own, provide for our families. And, of course, there's good responsibility and stewardship in that. We have a responsibility there. But, yeah, we can get very kind of insular or protective of those things, right? Even we know this from the time we're young. It can be very hard to share a possession with someone else, like, oh, but you might break it, or, you know, you might do something with it that I don't like, or I just might not get to play with it while you're using it.
Yeah.
And so there's some of that. And I think in the story too, like this kind of foreignness of like, who's David, right? Who's the son of Jesse? He's maybe just insulting David. Like,
he is in a Saul stronghold.
Yeah, you think you're a king, but Saul's the king.
Right.
But there is that also, like, well, I don't know any of you all. Why should I share with you? Even though David had apparently kind of done some protective work there and done some things for him. And so we can kind of be, you know, I mean, it comes up, the conversations are always hard, and we, you know, probably would do well not to get into all of them here, but even with taxation and just that kind of idea of sharing things. We read in Acts 2, you know, the people had everything in common in the church and they shared all their possessions, and we kind of say, wow, look at the church there, but we don't want to do that, you know, because we're so much more individual in the West.
Interesting.
And protective of what I've earned, what's for us, and, well, who are you? And I think there's at least things for us to consider.
Right.
And maybe we're puffed up in our possessions.
Yeah. And just to keep an eye on it, you know, and keep aware of this historical precedent and see where we might emulate that.
Sure. And to avoid just foolishness that points us away from the Lord.
Absolutely. Well, and then so we've been talking about Nabal, and he's got a primary issue of greed as his big thing. Let's move over to David, because David, it's a prideful anger is really the big thing. And it's so fascinating to read these Old Testament books and stories, because, you know, you'll read about these folks and they're 2, 3, 4, however many thousand years removed from us. And it's like, man, that is just so relatable.
Yeah.
Because David, he comes and he's been, it seems like he's been, you know, he's been kind of helping out Nabal. And his ask, at least what is written that he says, is, hey, can we just, like, be here? And when Nabal says no, he insults him. David's immediate response is to escalate.
Yeah.
And then these escalations keep happening. And I thought, man, if I haven't done that on Facebook or Twitter myself, you know, that's just such a, we have such a natural proclivity to, I've been insulted, my people have been insulted, I'm going to respond and escalate, even if it may have been just at first.
Right.
I'm going to shoot way past that just
right
response.
Right.
And that was just a fascinating thing to look at and see that. And I was wondering if you could give some insight in how do we know if our angers are actually justified, and when do we move past a justified anger to something that is unjust, that is prideful, that that's not God. God's not happy with it.
Right. Right, because there is things that are unjust in this world that upset us, or just brokenness we get upset at. We see Jesus do that too. And so there is moments of righteous anger, In my experience, those are infrequent. Even right, you know, we just maybe we have it for a moment, but then we it becomes a lot of times about something else. Usually ourselves, like you just pointed out, yeah. Austin. because I don't know if we said that explicitly yesterday, but very often our anger and our sustained anger has to do with our pride.
Gotcha.
And just that this isn't going my way. I don't like the way you're talking about me. There's a connection there between pride and anger often. But there are things, of course, we should be upset about. You could think of Moses coming down the mountain and smashing the tablets when he sees the people worshiping the golden calf. I mean, Jesus seems to get upset in the face of death sometimes, and even in the face of just brokenness and sin. This is not how it's supposed to be. And, of course, we think of him cleansing or clearing the temple, too, those moments. But I think for us, if that is the case, it should be short-lived even, you know, that moment.
So then if we find ourselves getting this sustained anger, mm-hmm. how would you, you know, even spiritually but also just practically, how would you advise us as we try and de-escalate and move out of that sustained mindset?
To get out of it, you mean?
Yeah, if we recognize that, oh, I've been angry for a long time, or I'm angry, that's my primary emotion. Yeah. How do I?
The recognition is good. Just of that, like you said, if you're able to recognize, I think I'm a little too angry. I've been holding on to anger or getting angry a lot. That's a good first step because sometimes we don't even realize it and we need someone to help us. But in realizing that, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of good counseling advice just practically out there too about this, even just the counting to 10 and those sort of things.
Right.
Take a breath. Mm-hmm. It can be good. What we noticed in the text with Abigail, for one thing, is how she brings the Lord into the conversation. Mm-hmm. And speaking to those who are Christians, I think that's really important. And so bringing God in the conversation, maybe it's, I just need to spend a little time in the Word. And maybe you have some go-to passages, maybe some favorites, right? Where just you're reminded of God's promises, you're reminded of His love for you, you're reminded how He brings justice.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's different Psalms which speak very wonderfully about how God brings justice. He's the one who's going to judge the earth and all the nations. And just that can bring a comfort and a reminder of his plans. And it seems like that has an effect on David when Abigail talks to him and says, you're going to be the king. And why shed blood here and be burdened in that way when you don't need to? And we see how the Lord does take care of the situation. He strikes down Nabal in answer to that, and David praises the Lord for it. So maybe spending some time, if we know we're dealing with that and having some struggles, and it could be in prayer too, but just bringing the Lord into the conversation. Because I know when I'm angry, I'm mostly just talking to myself
or engaging
with things that make me more upset.
Seeking it out.
Right, exactly. Looking for let me see what else this person said on their Twitter
feed. I'm going to go and, you know, read all of the things that they've said that make me angry and, you know, dislike all of them or...
Or you know what I'm good at as well? Imagining things about someone else that I think I probably also wouldn't like.
The shower arguments that you have with yourself about, you know, this imaginary person that never have happened, never will happen, but you imagine yourself.
Oh, they said this. I thought they're like this or that.
And I'd respond like this, and wouldn't that be...
Yes.
Yeah.
We get just even more built up. So being able to converse with the Lord or, you know, with someone else like you and I here, you know, if one of us was in that and just... You know, reminding each other of the Lord's work. And sometimes it might just be being able to see the way we act and talk out of anger.
Hmm.
Right. And maybe it's a post. I mean, those are there when we put them out on social media. Hey, this isn't you who said this or did this. We have a phrase we often say, I was out of my mind. I wasn't myself. We often say that when we're kind of lost it with our temper. So those kind of checks are good. We talked about food as part of that.
And, yeah.
You know, especially if there's some beef, as we might say, with someone else, to try and get together with them and just share even a cup of coffee, you know, a breakfast, something. And we avoid that because we'd like to stay angry.
Right.
You know? Yeah. We don't want to have, you know, that dissipate because of our pride. We just think like, well, we have that over this person by being angry at them.
Right.
And instead of seeking that out, and it's just, that phrase is thrown around for a lot for a reason, how it is hard to be angry at someone up close. Because when we're sitting like this, it's just different. Yeah. If I'm at a keyboard or my phone, I can just like, who's this person? They maybe have a little picture in the corner of the screen. I don't know them.
Right.
I spout off.
Right.
But here we're sitting, we're sharing a cup of coffee. We're, you know, having an omelet, whatever.
Right.
It's just, this is, you know, a different kind of conversation.
Well, and even practically, you know, anger is a thing.
Oh, for sure.
Like, just even if I find myself irrationally angry, sometimes I'll just go and eat. Mm-hmm. And that does wonders, even just practically, not even metaphorically.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you go back to when we're babies, right? And there's a couple things that when a baby's crying, that's usually going on. And one of them is, I'm hungry.
I'm hungry.
So
I'm going
to scream at you until you give me some food. Right. You know? And although we get older and a little more controlled in our responses.
Sometimes it's good to go back and remember that basic human need.
It will come out. We do need to eat, and we might just scream, but we might lash out.
Right.
And yeah, sometimes we know that about ourselves. Like, I need to eat something, but so it's true.
I'd real quick like to shift back to Abigail, because Abigail fascinates me here, because she is in a really interesting position socially.
Yes.
Because this is, so this is back, you know, Old Testament, women are subservient.
Right, much less of a role.
You know, they have much less of a role. And yet she seems to be playing a diplomat's role. She is, seems to be playing the role of, you know, HR, and that the servant comes and tells, like, tells her, not Nabal. It's like, nobody's going to talk to Nabal because he's too angry. So she comes. And so she is this, and then she comes and she speaks prophetically, it would seem, to David. And that is just a fascinating, there's so much to unpack there, I think.
Oh, I know. I almost wish we got more insight into Abigail. There's really not much after this story about her because, just a fascinating character. We get the description that she's wise and intelligent and beautiful, a counterpart to David, as it were, who's described in very similar ways when he comes on the scene. But is she really... almost functions as the head of the household. I mean, the servants go to her. It seems like this is probably not the first time because they know we can't deal with Nabal. You know how he is, basically. Kind of what we hear from the servant there. But boy, she takes action. She doesn't talk to Nabal about what she's doing. She's very wise, too. She doesn't talk to him. He's been out partying. When she comes back after talking with David, she doesn't tell him right away. She waits till the next day, sobered up, then tells him about what's gone on and what would have happened. And then the Lord strikes Nabal. But yeah, just such wisdom. We talked about that a little bit in the way that she speaks to David. She understands the situation. She very clearly, like you said, in the power of the Spirit or however God, in that case, she sees clearly about David, where things are going. And she's able to bring that out in that conversation to point David to that. She's clearly respected by the servants. They see her wisdom and her just way to manage situations. So, yeah, just an impressive person.
And really seems to have a lot of insight just in that, like, these two guys are getting, you know, and how often do we see this, that these two guys, head of the household, they're getting all macho. It's like, well, I'm cooler than you. Well, you're, you know, I have more money than, and then she just comes down and she's like, no, boys, stop it.
Right. There is a little ego clash. Not that females can't do this either, but we seem as males maybe a little more prone to the pride in, like, the escalation, like you said, respond to anger with anger.
Well, and I think that's, you know, a historical thing from that time period, too, in that culture, too. That was just very much a thing. And that's something that I think we see a lot now is just, you know, we, as, you know, at least in our current context, that tends to be the stereotype of, you know. And so just the way she's like, guys, calm down. This isn't as big a deal as you need to make it. And so I really admire her, her wisdom and the way, you know, God just really... She was bold, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the fact that she goes and disobeys her husband in this context.
Right.
And goes to confront angry David, who's coming with 600 soldiers.
Right.
That's bold.
It is. And she even, I can't remember if it's she or David who says it in the middle of the text there, her life is in danger. I mean, there's a reference to, you spared my life. Like, here comes a delegation from Nabal. David could have just, you know, wiped them out, too. We might think, oh, that's over the top. He wouldn't do that to Abigail. But when we're seeing red, you know, David's ready to wipe everybody out. And so just even receiving her delegation, she's taking a risk there and going to meet him. And so, yeah, just the courage there, understanding this is what needs to be done, and then, doing it.
Yeah.
And just a fascinating, like I said, you almost wish you learned a little bit more there. Of course, her and David end up husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the close of the story, but we really don't hear too much else about Abigail. But just a reminder, too, I think, how the Lord works. David says, he notes it after she speaks, and he's calming down, the Lord sent you to me today.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, in the culture, this you'd think, oh, it'd be Nabal. He's the wealthy business guy, the landowner. He's the prominent citizen. Well, the Lord's going to have him and David together, not a woman in this context. But here comes Abigail. The Lord's going to work through her and speak through her and speak his word, really, to David.
Yeah.
David clearly recognizes that. And it's a reminder for us, whatever culture we might be in, there's always times when we might be in a position where we feel like we have lesser voice, or we actually do. We're maybe more of the minority in whatever way that might take. And a reminder, just because I'm not the smartest person, or I don't look like the majority here or sound like the majority, doesn't mean that God won't work through you and doesn't have a way that he wants to work through
and
you.
And for those of us who aren't in that minority, it gives us a chance to self-reflect and be like, let me make sure that I'm giving room for these people.
Yeah.
So that I can listen and hear when I'm confronted.
Yeah, and like credit to David here that he does listen to Abigail.
Yeah.
And he could have still been mad. It's not what happens, but he could have said, yeah, who are you? You're with Nabal. You're just trying to trick me here, or whatever. Or you're a woman. Why should I listen to you? And, you know, he could have responded poorly in a lot of ways. But he doesn't. He hears this from this person he doesn't really know, but he receives it as a word from the Lord. And so there is a good reminder there. Because sometimes, no matter what if we're in a maybe majority position, power position, or the opposite, we can still tend to say, well, this is the only way I'll hear something from God. Maybe I got my certain passages, ways I think God talks to me, or people that I'll listen to.
Yeah.
But if I'm being honest, there's been times where people who maybe I'm not always agreeing with have said things to me that was a word from the Lord that I needed to hear.
Yeah.
And not saying I always heard that well, but in hindsight, often I can see clearly, like, oh, I needed that word. I just wasn't ready to hear it from them.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think credit to David, at least, that he heard this word from the Lord from Abigail and recognized it. So.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming and talking. There's a lot more I would love to ask, but. These conversations get away from us.
Need to wrap.
You know,
too.
As much as I could talk for a few hours, I'm not sure all of our listeners want to hear us do that.
No, they hear me enough, I think so.
Well, blessings on you, Dan. Thank you so much. Thank you also, dear listeners. As always, this is just such an honor. Did just want to let you all know for next week, things might be a little different. Dan is going on vacation right after he preaches, so he won't be here to talk about it. And Tim is coming back right after Dan preaches, so he won't have been there for the sermon. So most likely there will be just a week where we don't have anything, but I might pull some devotion or something together. We'll see. But either way, thank you for being a part of the Deeper community. Thank you for your time, your energy, and your attention. God bless you all.